This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 64 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are you?
Hi, David. I'm great. I'm all ready to talk drones, UAVs, UAS, whatever we're going to call them.
Yeah, I guess we've given up the fact that drones is, you know, a year ago we were saying we were not going to use the word drone, but you know, it seems like everybody else is. So I think we got sucked into it too.
I think so. I think the word's been co-opted by the popular press and the public, and so we're sticking with drone.
Who are we to judge the popular press and the general public, right?
That's right.
Well, we got a lot of news this week, really diverse news. Some of the topics are we get a Floxy amphibian, severe regs from the subcontinent, a DJI Phantom causes a riot over a soccer game. That's one for your grounded files. Open code and FAA COAs. DARPA wants to take a male out to sea. And 15 billion what in 2020? Of course, we've got lots of listener mail and a video of the week, so it's a full show. I guess, Max, we better get started. Well, the first story was actually a press release we really received from Flyox. It's the Flyox Amphib UAV enters the market, and this is from SingularAircraft.com. I thought this was pretty cool. Flyox One is a high-wing aircraft with a 14-meter wingspan, a 2,000-pound payload, and is powered by 340-horsepower engines. It can automatically take off and land and be programmed with preset flight paths. And it looks good, too.
It does look good. And it's a large craft. I mean, this is not a hobbyist UAV for sure. They look towards applications in agriculture and firefighting, transportation, surveillance, and rescue. And this thing, not only can it take off and land on water, but it will also work, according to Singular Aircraft, on unpaved or unimproved runways, even on snow and ice. So I think what they're really trying to do is build a very versatile kind of UAV that can be used in a variety of applications. When I looked through the Singular Aircraft website, I think one of the points they try to make with this plane, David, is that they can configure it, build it to the requirements that you have depending on your application. I don't know really where they stand in terms of the development and certification and all that. That part of it wasn't clear to me. Did you get a sense of that, David?
They've released it, and I think basically it's looking for the first customers, was my impression. They're looking for their first customers to purchase it. Though I didn't see anything about first flight or anything like that, so maybe we'll have to follow up on it. I just took it because it looks cool. And of course, we've had this discussion in the past that the prototype drawings may not necessarily be what actually comes out of the factory, but prototype drawings are really cool. And you and I both like them. And this is one of those really cool amphibians. And I wondered if our friend Mr. Dotson, who plays with UAVs by day and seaplanes by night with his Nick Grant Adventures, may write a 21st century novel with this as its plot for Nick.
No, there's an idea.
So, of course, we have what's becoming our weekly segment, This Week in Regulation, and we go to the Indian subcontinent, and this one's pretty harsh.
It is, David. The Directorate General of Civil Aviation, the DGCA, they've prohibited the use of civilian drones in India. And what they say is, quote, due to lack of regulation, operating procedures and standards, and uncertainty of the technology, UAS poses threat for air collisions and accidents. So kind of what they're doing is saying that since they don't have regulations in place, they're just going to ban the things altogether.
It might not be a bad idea, because we've talked a lot in Airplane Geeks about the Indian subcontinent in India doesn't really have an aviation safety record that everybody wants to mirror. So it is probably not a bad idea. It's just sort of surprising that it's such a drastic step, but I guess we'll see if there's any pushback. We don't really know, and maybe some of our listeners know, if there's such a continent-wide or a country-wide upswelling of the use of civilian UAVs in India. It's kind of a market we haven't really touched on before. If our listeners have any opinions on that, it would be feedback at theuavdigest.com, and maybe we can find out a little bit more. But the big news is Amazon Prime was trying to skirt the FAA by hoping to test in India, and I guess that's completely grounded, huh?
It would seem so. And yeah, I think that Amazon and maybe some others looked towards India because of the lack of regulations and saw it as an opportunity to do some development and some testing. Also, with regard to Amazon Prime Air, India, of course, has some extremely dense areas with a lot of traffic, a lot of normal traffic that kind of lends themselves to delivery of packages by drone. So it represented a good opportunity from that standpoint, a good market to be in. But like you say, David, sounds like until regulations are developed within India that cover this area, that these guys are grounded.
Well, since you said grounded, I guess we'll talk about our can't believe you did this and you should be grounded. A DJI Phantom flew over the Serbia versus Albania game, and basically a fistfight, brawl, and riot started because people didn't like what the little Phantom was carrying.
That's right. It was carrying a Greater Albania flag, which has got a lot of political connotations in that area. I think the two teams were in a tense enough situation as it was, and then this thing flies over, and a Serbian player pulls the flag down off of the Phantom, and that led to the brawl. We see lots of effects of, you know, flying your drones and around sporting events and things like this, but I think this is bringing it to a whole new level.
Now, in all fairness to the poor little DJI, it wasn't really, this is one of those lessons in, it's not the tool, it's the operator. I mean, clearly this was done as an inflammatory act, but that being said, it did make news because it was the drone that caused the fight. Really, the news story should have been the operator caused the flight. The drone was just the tool in which that caused it to happen.
Right. Good point.
Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Soccer games or football in Europe represent a lot of passion and energy. And we've seen many times before issues surrounding that, not related to UAVs, but then stir into that mix this kind of political statement of this particular flag. And I guess the term is a recipe for disaster, and that's what happened.
So I'm going to let you deal with this one, because even though I put it in the show notes, this is right up your alley with your Raspberry Pi, you know, and I still think that requires whipped cream, but you don't. So Industry Coalition wants open source code for drones. This was from governmenttech.com or govtech.com.
So what we have here is the establishment of something called the Drone Code Project, and this is under the Linux Foundation Collaborative Project. Linux, of course, being an open source operating system. And what they've done is created this project that includes the APM and the ArduPilot UAV software platform and the associated code. They want to bring in a lot of developers and turn that into something that's open source that can be used as control software, navigation software for UAVs broadly. Open source is a great approach, and I think it's pretty applicable in this kind of a situation. You don't have to have makers develop their own systems, their own code. Being open source, that means that it's visible to everyone, so people can contribute creative improvements. People can also verify the fact that there's no bugs or opportunities for malware and things like that. So this is a great, I think this is a great idea. Now, the founding members of the Drone Code Project is kind of an interesting group that includes 3D Robotics, which of course is big in this area, Beidou, Box, Drone Deploy, Intel, J-Drones, Laser Navigation, Qualcomm Technologies, the chip makers, Skyward, Squadron System, Walkera, and UNIC. We're seeing a lot of groups
collaborative
arrangements, and we've got some more we'll talk about in the future. And according to this article in Government Technology, more than 1,200 developers are currently working on Drone Code on that project. So I think this is a good thing that's going to have a positive impact for a wide range of the unmanned industry.
Okay, let's talk about something I understand, the FAA drinking aim and COAs. This was quite surprising, in my opinion, this week. This was from the DaytonDailyNews.com, and we know that Dayton lost out to be one of the FAA test centers, but the FAA gave Wright State Research Institute a COA to use a drone to map area terrain. I was really surprised at this, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting move. They're going to partner with 3D Aerial Solutions, and they're going to fly an EB drone. This is at the Wilmington Air Park, and they're going to run a photogrammetry. That's always hard to say. They're going to run
photogrammetry flights. They're going to take lots of pictures with two-dimensional photographs to create a 3D image. Yes.
That's right. And I guess the Ohio and Indiana UAS test site comes into this, and they're going to use that data to virtually fly UAVs.
Interesting. So we're going to make the terrain to make a UAV simulator.
Yeah, interesting.
Is that first-person view?
The simulator?
Can you make a first-person view simulator? And then if it is a first-person view simulator, is it first-person view?
It's simulated first-person view. How about that?
Sorry, folks. I just decided I'm in a kind of quirky mood tonight, so I apologize in advance.
So this EB that they're going to fly is kind of interesting. It's hand-launched. It's sort of a flying wing kind of an aircraft. I guess that's how I'd characterize it. It has a single pusher engine, 38-inch wingspan. And like fixed-wing UAVs, has a longer flight time than you'd find with multi-copters. It has a 50-minute flight time. A radio range, according to the specs, just under 2 miles. So it's not going to get that far away.
But it is going to get beyond line of sight. I mean, if you're going to fly it in that range, it's going to be beyond your visual acumen. I'm trying to remember. Has an EB come up before? I mean, we've noticed that once a vehicle has been given a COA from the FAA as a trend recently, they suddenly allow it to be used more because there's a COA precedent. I don't remember if one of the test sites is actually flying an EB or not, but that seems to me sticks in my head. So it might be that's why they were able to get the COA, is because one of the other test sites is using an EB.
Yeah, we talked about the EB back in episode 33, and we had an item there.
So let's go to a little bit bigger and talk about males in the Navy and DARPA. This was from FlightGlobal.com, a little military stuff for you folks. And DARPA advances ship-based male UAV concept. Now, to remind everybody, male is medium altitude, long endurance. So you're talking something of the Predator and Reaper class of aircraft to be launched and recovered on a ship. So you're talking about a sizable increase in aircraft. Normally, the Navy and the Coast Guard have been using Scan Eagles, which are considered smaller. So it's going to be a big change.
Yeah, and this is part of this TERN program, right? The Tactically Exploited Reconnaissance Node. That's how you get TERN, which, according to DARPA, envisions using smaller ships as mobile launch and recovery sites for male unmanned aircraft. And they say that ideally the TERN concept would enable on-demand ship-based unmanned aircraft system operations without extensive, time-consuming, and irreversible ship modifications.
So, and TERN is like the bird, not like the maneuver. What they're trying to say is they basically want to be able to make, and this is kind of like a Scan Eagle. A Scan Eagle, you can launch off the deck of a destroyer and with its catapult and its netting and really not have an effect on the ship. They want to take that ability and increase it to a male aircraft where you're talking about an aircraft with 24 hours endurance, like a Predator or a Reaper, and still be able to recover it on the ship without losing the ability of the ship to be a ship. So the Navy does not want to build drone aircraft carriers.
Right. Use the existing ships, right?
Right. They want to have destroyers and frigates and maybe even an aircraft carrier, but to be able to not affect the overall operations of the ship. So the subscale flight demonstrations are expected over the next 12 months. So we'll follow it. I hope for DARPA it's as successful as their X-47B program. Mm-hmm. And then of course I'm going to give a shout out if anybody is on these programs at the Navy. We would love to have you on to talk about them. But yeah, so this is going to be something I think we'll have fun following up. And AeroVironment is one of the top people, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with as a male UAV.
Right, because DARPA has awarded them this preliminary design contract worth $19 million to demonstrate the launch and recovery. So it's pretty early on in the sort of overall timeline of the project.
Well, the next one is a big deal, as in billions of dollars. This was from onlineamd.com. UAV market research IGI Consulting is expecting... It released its 2014 UAV market research study, and it's got some big numbers in it, huh, Max?
Yeah, just looking at the U.S. market, it says that it will grow from $5 billion in 2013 to $15 billion in 2020. And this, I imagine that $5 billion currently, most of that is military, but the study looks at the total UAV market, not only including the military, but also civil, commercial, small UAS, even do-it-yourself amateur and radio control aircraft. So it's looking at the entire spectrum of UAVs. And it says that the growth, taking that $5 billion to $15 billion, is mostly going to be driven by, guess what, not military, but commercial and the do-it-yourself market.
And I thought you were leading up to something else, which was there's an implication by this that, you know, after 2015, if a certain Federal Aviation Administration organization releases guidelines, if there's guidelines, it could be exponential growth. It all depends upon, you know, the pump is primed. Now all we got to do is get the FAA to turn on the faucet.
That's right. And they talk about what some of the major commercial applications look to be as part of their forecast. And it's not really a surprise. In fact, if I was going to, you know, without seeing the data from the report, try to guess at what they are, I think I'd pretty much peg it to what they have, which is that agriculture first, also real estate and filmmaking, and then other applications in the commercial arena include oil and pipeline, electric utility, and there it is, package delivery.
But you know what? I think if we were having this discussion this time last year, I don't think we would have included filmmaking.
Nah, that's true. That kind of came to the fore after the effort on the part of that industry to get some COAs going for a group of filmmakers, and yeah, that kind of brought that to the forefront.
And the package delivery, of course, that we might have discussed, but that definitely was Mr. Bezos in December of last year. But agriculture, real estate, you know, real estate's already in the market. Agriculture, this just came to me as a thought. It's an interesting parallel that real estate dove in and agriculture is sort of waiting. It's sort of, they're trying to do the right thing, you know, and the two industries took slightly diverse routes. You know, most of the cease and desist orders came to the real estate organizations, and you haven't heard anything like that from the agriculture other than they've been trying to get the FAA to go, let us do it. You know, so it's interesting how the different tacks of the industries are going.
And what we really want to do is get the regulations in place so that we don't have this situation where, you know, people are behaving differently in some cases appropriately, and in other cases, well, maybe not quite. We just need to get on with the business of expanding this industry, and I'll call it an industry because I think it is, and it especially will be.
We're ready out of things to talk about.
Not. No. So we've got a video of the week, David, don't we?
This was sent to us, I think, by a couple of people. It's interesting how these videos sort of go viral, and next thing you know, we've got 3 or 4 days worth of emails where people have sent us, you got to see this, you got to see this. And this one is a theme that we've had a couple of times where we have UAV, or a quadcopter, versus Hawk. And unfortunately, this Red Tail Hawk takes out the FC-40, huh?
It's a nice short video because it doesn't take long for this bird to swoop down, decide that it's not very pleased with this quadcopter, and to knock it out of the sky. And we, like you say, David, we have seen other examples of where birds have reacted to UAVs in ways that aren't very good for the UAV.
In ways that soccer players react to quadcopters carrying banners.
Exactly. And, you know, it makes you wonder to what extent this represents an impediment to things like package delivery and other applications. I mean, I don't know a lot about birds of prey and how prone they are to, you know, attacking other flying creatures that they think are a threat or are invading their area. But if this is something that could happen frequently, then this is a tough one. I don't know how Amazon Prime Air, for example, would approach this if it represents, you know, a real danger. Because not only are we talking about potentially injury to birds, but also if they're able to take a multi-copter out of the sky and drop it down to the ground, you know, you may injure people on the ground. So I don't know if this is a real big problem or not, but it seems like it has the potential to be.
Well, there are these things that are called environmental impact studies. So any of those PhD or grad students who want to study quadcopters might want to decide how does a quadcopter affect its environment, and birds of prey would be one of those things. You know, it's kind of like that out in California, that solar power plant, that huge solar power plant that they developed.
Yes,
and that one of the inadvertent side effects is it's so hot over the power plant, the birds are incinerating as they fly over, which wasn't something until it was built that they realized happened. So, yeah, there's always some sort of impact. It may be small, it may be large, but there's always some sort of impact. But good video, and it's entertaining, and let's hear it for the Red Tail Hawk. It's clearly the superior winner in that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Max, we got lots of feedback. We better get going. So the first one was from Tim Trott, who was our guest. And last week we had someone wanting to know about UAV logbooks. And Tim sent us, 6 links, 7 links. that we'll put in the show notes for various Androids and flight logs. And Max, you even found one for iOS, huh?
Yeah, well, clearly Tim Trott is an Android guy because a lot of these are links to the Google Play and they include things like the UAV flight log, the RPAS logger light, and things like that that are apps for Android. And so we'll put those in the show notes. He's also sent us something from UAS flight log software, an article there. And like you say, David, I just got curious. So I went to the iTunes store and tried to search for something like a logbook for UAVs. And I found the drone logbook for $1.99. We'll put all those links in the show notes. Also, an article from Tim in Southern Helicam, Where Do We Go From Here, that talks about logbooks as well as some other topics. So for those of you interested in starting to log your flight time, I think you want to take a look at this and at least compare these to get some ideas about what sorts of functionality they have, see if there's something that matches up with what you do. And most of these are either free or they're very low cost.
So our next one was from Eric Larson. It's another video. The poor little copter takes out one of the most magnificent mosques in Turkey. Unlike the quad with the hawk, this one actually survives. So what did you think about that? This one?
Well, the views were spectacular. This mosque is really impressive, really beautiful. And then the quadcopter hits it. And I don't really know if it damaged the building or not, but if it didn't, it could have. And I think this is another, you know, example of maybe some flying here that could have been a little bit better. It's nice to take some impressive aerial views of buildings, but we need to know how to fly the aircraft so that we don't hit the buildings. And I guess it did turn out okay in the end, but it could have, again, it could have, same as with the Hawk, it could have turned out differently. The quadcopter could have struck someone on the ground as it fell down.
So the next one was from DJ. Great stuff. Listen to a few episodes. I wanted to say I like how you guys get straight to the information in the podcast. The strain starts rolling in the first minute, usually. Nice. And you get the job done in 30 minutes. Well, Max won't let me talk beyond that because it becomes an editing nightmare. Keep them coming. I'm learning a lot. I'm also interested in learning about potential careers in the UAV industry. Yeah, we really haven't talked about careers, have we?
Not to any great extent. We talk about the potential, and DJ uses that word, potential careers, but we do talk about the potential of careers, both for people who have entrepreneurial kind of aspirations. There's a lot of companies that could be started, and also for those opportunities where you might find employment with an existing company that maybe is a manufacturer of UAVs. I think this is going to blossom as the industry develops and as the forecast we mentioned earlier kind of points to. So I think the best advice I'd give right now is for people to look ahead at that and assume that the opportunities will start to emerge in the next couple of years. So position yourself for that. Get the kind of education you want. Get the kind of experience that will make you successful or competitive. And if you're thinking about starting your own company, start to develop a business plan. Even if you can't launch the company or at least operate UAVs at this point, at least start developing your business plan so that when it is possible to, you know, open up the doors to the shop, you'll be ready to go.
And lastly, we got one from Bennett. I've been listening to your podcast for the last 3 or 4 weeks and I thought I'd heed your call for more info. He's a drone aerial cinematographer, and he does the video while his pilot flies the UAV, which is good. We've talked about that, and our buddy Parker, that's the way he works it. The video, he flies the copter, and someone else does the videography. And he was considering filing for an FAA exemption, And he was contacted by UAVSA.org, which is the UAV Systems Association. And their website is www.uavsa.org.
And they call it, they have a tagline or a subtitle. They call it America's First Commercial Drone Association. And you can check out their website, but the membership includes things like UAV manufacturers, distributors, retailers, but also publishing companies, software publishers, as well as professional photographers and enthusiasts. So it may be something you want to check out. You can also follow them on Twitter, where they're at UAVSA USA.
And also, we'll put this in the show notes. Bennett provided us a sample video reel from his Vimeo account. So we'll put that in the show notes. Another good video. That's three videos for the week. Boy, we're driving everybody to the videos, but I guess that's the nature of UAVs.
All right. Well, David, I think that's about it for this episode. Want to thank everyone for listening to episode 64 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. We have show notes there with links to all the sites and topics that we talk about. If you'd like to use the shortcut, you can also find the show notes at theuavdigest.com/64 if you want to go straight there. So we're also on Twitter, right, David? You can find us there at
@UAVDigest. Of course, check our Facebook page at facebook.com/theuavdigest. And of course, keep sending us our emails. We love getting a filled email box every day, and that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you like us, or more to the point, love us, leave a feedback or a comment on iTunes and Stitcher.com, because who's streaming this show to their phone, it helps people find us, and we continue to grow, and we appreciate all of the people who are listening and all the great feedback. But the more feedback we get, the more notoriety we get and the better guests we get, and Max and I can do less talking, so you'll hear other people talk. So, and last but not least, two more things. You want some swag? We have cafepress.com/theuavdigest. And of course, we'd like to thank our patrons and our sponsors. And if you'd like to help Max and I pay for this little show and eventually take it on the road, you can go to our website, which is theuavdigest.com, or patreon.com/theuavdigest, and click the donate link.
All right. So this has been Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly. Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.